Welcome to the first episode of the Humming Projector Podcast, a podcast about film, projectors, and film collecting. My name is Eivind Moik, and some of you might recognize my name from the Super 8 Database Project. Although I do indeed run that project too, this podcast is not directly connected to it. Where Super 8 Database covers just Super 8, this podcast will cover all gauges. That said, as I and my friends are mostly into 8mm and 60mm, these gauges will be somewhat more in focus than the others. I need to add that I am not an authority at all in this world of film and collecting, just an enthusiast that want to share my enjoyment of this hobby. But hopefully it will be of interest for both experienced and new collectors. And with that introduction, we are ready to move on to our first episode's topic. I'm here with my longtime friend Douglas Warren. How are you doing today, Doug?
Oh, doing just fine. How about you?
I'm doing fine. At least now we can share with the audience that we have had some technical issues for this first recording. So we have had several attempts for this introduction. So if we seemed a little bit rusty on the introduction, that might be why. In today's episode, we'll talk about digests and extracts, and I guess all of you listeners would know the difference, but in case someone are totally new to the scene, we can try to explain the difference between a digest and extract. A digest is where you edit a whole movie into a short sequence, small parts of the movie into a short sequence, and an extract is one part taken out of the movie. And let's start with the question, why are there so many digests? When I talk to my colleagues and friends, they don't understand the point of watching a digest at all. So why did it even exist in the first place?
I think the reason digests came around was that when you think about the time period that these products were produced, in the 70s, there weren't VCRs. Either you went to the movies or you waited a year or two for a movie to come to television. So I think digest became popular because at least it gave you a nice souvenir of the movie. And, you know, this was a big thing before the videotape scene exploded in the 1980s. I remember, you would walk in, speaking regarding to the United States, you'd walk into department stores and in the photography department, you'd see racks of movies. That was a pretty exciting thing, really. Just to even have, something that you knew was just going to be a few scenes, but still you owned a part of the movie. And that was a very exciting thing. And but unfortunately, as we know, when the VHS market especially took off, we saw the quick decline of Super 8 on the whole as far as the consumer product was concerned.
Yes, and the cost, of course, was a big, big deal. Mm-hmm. When we look at the, I took a look at the Walton catalog from 1979, and a 400 digest would cost £27 at that time. That's the equal of $33. And today's prices, that's 6.47 times as high as average prices since 1979, according to the Office for National Statistics Composite Price Index in the UK. So that would mean, in today's price, that would be £175 or US$214. That's quite a hefty price for 400 feet of film.
Yeah, I mean, for what essentially amounts to 16 to 18 minutes of film. I remember 1980, 81, the last catalog, so here in the U.S. that Ken Films put out, their 400-foot color sound digests were going for about US$70. And you take in inflation now, that's, like you said, it would be considerably more even in today's dollars. I mean, which means, $70 was still a lot of money back then for, again, a small amount of film.
Yeah, so we can just imagine how a full movie would have cost.
Oh, yeah.
That would be super expensive.
I remember, I'm old enough to remember the catalogs back then. And this was like, I'll use a time frame in 1981 again. And I remember seeing, I think it was War of the Worlds had been released as a full Super 8 feature. Now, this was in $1981, and it was nearly $400 US dollars at the time. Yeah. That would translate into over $1,000 in today's money. That's a lot of money for a single movie.
Yeah. And it kind of still applies today, because the full movies are expensive to get today as well. So I guess the same mechanics still exist today. When we can't afford the full movie, we would still have to kind of have fun with a shorter version.
Oh, absolutely. As they say, you know, the film hobby's never been a cheap one. It's an expensive hobby. It always has been. It's never been cheap. And I think for the average consumer back in the day, that's probably one of the reasons, like, the little 200-foot editions were popular, because at least compared to, like, 400 and larger, they were considerably more affordable. Even then, they weren't the cheapest by, you know, the money standards of the time, but still. I think that's why they produced so many of them. I mean, some of the first sound films, I believe, that Ken Films released that were extremely popular was the Planet of the Apes series, which they never released in anything other than the 200 format. I think we've all had one or a few of those at one time, if you collect Super 8.
Yeah,
Everybody likes those films.
But today, the things are a little bit different, because most of us can see the full movie on Netflix or anywhere else, on Blu-ray perhaps. So,
true.
Why do we still like to watch digests instead of the full movie on Netflix? I guess it's a cheat question, because we it applies for all things we do in this hobby. But what are your thoughts on that question?
My feelings about it, the reason why I still collect digests, and I want to put something forth, I am mainly a digest collector. I only have one or two Super 8 features in my entire collection. For me, it's more of a nostalgia thing, because I got into this in my teens back in the 70s, and even more so in the 80s when I was in my 20s. And for me, that's where a lot of it lies. It's nostalgia. I have good memories of that period. You know, I can remember when you'd get films, and it was so exciting to unwrap that film, you know, and pop it on the projector. I couldn't wait to watch a new or used film. I mean, it was just exciting. And I still feel that way, you know. And that's probably another reason that explains our general demographic in the hobby. Most people you see in the hobby tend to be older, people who remember the glory days of it.
Yeah,
nostalgia plays into it.
I'm a bit younger than you, but it still applies to me. I remember Super 8 from the 80s. But there are one more thing for me as well, because often the thing for me is to play with the films and play with a projector and just hear it humming and not necessarily watch the full movie. So for me, it has its place as well, because I like the thing to change reel, look at different things, and then suddenly it digests, looks a little bit better. And not necessarily I want to commit to 1.5 hour or even more watching a full movie.
I think that definitely is a factor that plays in. From one of my film collecting friends, he had quite a few features. He sold them all, and he decided to stick with digest because he's a very busy guy. And he said he loved the fact that he can sit down and in an hour he can run 3 digests and get the, you know, and still enjoy film. I definitely time factor plays into it. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say that even the features I've had, I keep them. I don't. A lot of the collectors I know like mounted them on larger reels. I've always kept them on the 400 or 600 foot reels, because I may just want to watch a portion of it that day, and I'll come back to it a day or two later and watch another part. You know.
Yeah.
Time factor.
And when the point is, perhaps a big part of the point is to go back in the memory lane. It's probably good as well to watch different titles, not only just one title if you, for the time you have to watch this.
Absolutely.
At least it's like that for me.
Same.
There's also one more point for me why digest could be interesting. That some movies might be long and boring and actually get a little bit better when you cut it down, so you can see some parts of it. At least I can think about a few titles perhaps that way.
Oh, I absolutely agree with that. Some films work way better as a digest than they ever did as a feature-length film. Absolutely.
So let's look at a different part of this, and that is the art of editing. Because it's not easy to compress a full movie into this short. I mean, 80 minutes for a 400 and perhaps 7 minutes for a 200. So what makes an edit good? That's a difficult question, but what kind of thoughts do you have on that question?
I think for me, it depends upon, it's really on a film by film basis. A more action packed film, you know, you're of course going to want those various scenes that you remember from the movie, you know, that made the movie memorable in the first place. As long as they're edited logically, you know, and some of the story remains, you know, that'll be, you know, like Star Wars, you know, we know all the famous scenes. But story has a lot more plot. That's generally going to be a harder edit. And, you know, I think it really is on a film-by-film basis. I mean, I've seen some digests that are just beautifully edited. A fairly obscure film, I'm going to use this as an example, and I've seen the full-length film twice, and so I know what I'm watching, is a film called Emperor of the North. And that was one of the best, this is from Ken Films, to me, one of the best edited 400-foot digest they ever released. I mean, it was just beautifully done. And I remember watching it thinking, why can't they all be edited this well? You know? And I think that's really what it boils down to. It's a film-by-film basis. If it's an action movie, put in the best scenes. But if it's a film with a more intricate plot line, well, you're going to have a little more work to do. And unfortunately, as we both know, some digests fail in that regards.
Yeah.
They fail terribly.
One thing that I have been thinking about is what is the audience you are editing for? Because when I was watching Where Eagles Dare, that's not a digest as such. I'm more in an abridged version of 3x400. I watched that with my wife, and I know that story really well and watched the full movie many times. And I really like that abridged version really well. But I do know the full story. So when you know the full story, perhaps you'd select a little bit different scenes than what you would do if you present it to the viewer that watched it for the first time, because my wife really absolutely did not follow the story. And I can understand why, because it's a complex story. So I, for me, it's probably depending on what the audience would be. And I guess for most people, they would absolutely know the story from before. They would never have bought an expensive film like that and not knowing the film from before. So it's more looking back at the film. So I guess that was really important part of the editing process, thinking about what are the most memorable parts of the movie, more than how to make it flow really well. But I don't know, in families, probably one would know it well, and perhaps the wife or the husband of the projectionist didn't know that well. So it makes it difficult, though. But take another different kind of films like the Genevieve from 1953. That's a Divine 600 release. I have that one. And that's just a cross-country race with a vintage car. And two people make a bet and try to sabotage each other. And that's really, really simple to edit, because you can cut out any part you like, because they do different kind of sabotages and the car breakdowns. And you really don't mess up the full story, and no matter how you edit it. So that would require something completely different to edit. And another example is the Anderson tapes from 1971, a Columbia release, with Sean Connery, about a person getting out of jail and taking part in a robbery. And the whole part is a robbery. I've never seen the full movie, but it works really well, because you get the robbery, right? You can build up, so you can cut out any scene you like. So absolutely, the complexity of the story is really crucial on how well the edit will be. I fully agree on that.
I also feel that the nature of film in general, you know, digest, most people, again, and you brought up a good point, anybody putting that amount of money out knows the film. They know what they're getting. You know, they've seen more, I'd say more likely than not, they've seen the film. So they're not binds. And of course, I know some collectors have said, oh, I picked this up, and this is the first time I ever saw anything of this particular film was on a digest. And that's great. But I think, you know, eventually, you know, you're going to want to see the whole film. But I do feel, though, I mean, like when I used to make film lists of films I wanted, it was all films that I had seen. You know, I didn't want to, like, you know, drop $100 on U.S. dollars on something I had never seen. Because what if exactly. It turns out to be a turkey, you know? So I think that definitely plays into it. And if you look at the titles released, too, that says something. You know, they were going for, I guess, the popular films at whatever given time. Not always the case, but more often that was.
Yeah, I just remembered at the Blackpool Film Collectors Convention in November, Jed Jones from the former Duran director had a Q&A session with Adrian Winchester, and he mentioned something. His first edit of a movie to make a digest of it was a plane movie, and you can't really go that wrong on a plane movie. Because planes flying, you can cut anything you like and keep cool scenes. So, but a complex story makes it really difficult. And Columbia made one way of handling this problem of complex stories. So we all know that the commentaries of Columbia. What do you think about that?
The notorious Columbia narrator. Yes. It's really sad because Columbia had good edits on the whole, but if they had just dropped the narration, they would have been, I think they would actually be a lot more collectible, but the narration, they went overboard with it so bad. Yeah. I wound up personally selling off several Columbia titles because I just couldn't get past the over-the-top narration. And a lot of times it was so unintentionally funny, I'd be laughing at what the narrator was saying because it was so unnecessary. And I think they kind of they didn't help their reputation any with that personally.
No, they tried to fix a complex story with this, but it really takes you out of the movie and to the side of the movie as a spectator on a further distance, for me at least. Not, I don't feel like I'm in the movie when I watch the Columbia commentaries. But there's one thing for
absolutely.
Me. Let's first discuss the difference of a 200 digest and 400 digest, and then I'll make a different point of this. How do you think 200 feet digest works compared to a 400?
I think, again, with that, it depends upon the manufacturer. Because if you take, like, Castle, which eventually became Universal 8, they originally were nothing but 200 foot extracts back then. Of course, they had the best editors on the market. I mean, that's still some of the best 8mm digest editing to this day. My personal opinion on 200 foot digests, I always looked at them more as an extended trailer than I did anything, because you only have 7 to 8 minutes of film. And that's my feelings on them. Some have been done really well, but there were a lot that were not done so well. That's my own opinion. The 400 foot ones, of course, you do get more film, and you got more time and room to do an edit. You know, you can make it a much better edit.
Yeah, and all the problems we have with the digest on 400 multiplies when it gets down to 200, of course. But you took my point exactly. This is what I was going to say. The 200s have a lot of similarities to the trailers. Indeed, that's what I was thinking about before this episode as well. And that got me a little bit puzzled, because trailers often have commentaries to explain some of the plot, and I do not mind on trailers, but on digest, for some reason, I really don't like the commentaries. But so that's a little bit strange thing for me. But I guess it's the concept of trailers not being, you don't feel like you are in the movie. You are, we know the concept of being explained what the movie is about, I guess.
Absolutely. One of my favorite 200-foot digest that also translated into a wonderful 400-foot digest was the old Jimmy Stewart film, Flight of the Phoenix. I have the 200-foot one. I no longer have the 400-foot. And they're both beautifully done. And thankfully, no narration on either one. And whoever edited that did a wonderful job. It flows so well. And the key scenes from the movie are in there. They should have held on to that editor because he did a fantastic job. One of my favorite 200-foot digests by far.
Yeah,
which proves that you can do it. I mean, everybody knows Jaws. Remember the 200-foot Jaws digest? A fantastic digest from Universal 8. Probably that would, to me, qualify as the best in that length as far as editing.
Yeah, I think I agree. You have probably seen a lot more than me, but I agree that Jaws is wonderful on 200. Mm-hmm. And then we can look at the extracts a bit, perhaps, because we said we'll talk about digests and extracts, and we have only talked about digests so far. Do you prefer digests or extracts?
I'd have to say I lean more towards digests, but I'm also a fan of extracts. But with extracts, not many people did them, really. Disney was the main company that did extracts, and they did them very, very well. I've got about three or four of those in my collection, and they're just... Disney did a fantastic job on them. I mean, they really did. I know I've seen some collectors bash extracts. I disagree with that because if there's a particular scene that you really like, and Disney was great about picking that one scene that everybody would talk about and pulling that as the extract for their films, and they always did a good job with it. Because I'm trying to think, other than Disney, who really did extracts? So maybe there's some of the foreign producers that did. Disney's the only one that really comes to mind for me.
Yeah. And Disney are more than animations. But when you get to animations, I was thinking, for me, extracts work better for animations than live movies.
Absolutely.
And I wondered why I think so. And when I was thinking about it, I think it for me is a lot down to, for animations, take short cartoons, Donald Duck or something. You are used to jumping into some random action, and you buy that concept of jumping right into some random action where you have not much explaining in beforehand. So for me, it's a little bit about the same when you take an extract from an animation, a full movie, a 1.5 hour animation, and you take one part of it. It feels more like a cartoon where you are okay with not knowing everything. You buy the concept of seeing a character in some action. And I can't explain it better than that, I think, because for a live-action movie, you wouldn't, like, buy in the same way by the premise of jumping right into some live-action in the same sense.
Right, right. Right. Well, again, I think I personally think it depends upon the film. You know, I have a lot of 200-foot digests. I have actually, that's the bulk of my collection, believe it or not. And again, it works with some not so much. But to me, the most successful were probably the Castle films, horror and science fiction titles. They did a fantastic job with only 8 minutes. I mean, you totally get the gist of the film when that short 8 minutes, you know.
Yeah.
And those worked really well, you know. And they demand the high prices now, unfortunately. And that's another topic we can eventually talk about, is the cost of film these days and how so the market's getting kind of crazy out there.
Yeah, yeah. And that's another point, because many of the digests were sold in so huge numbers. So in today's prices, you get the... digest and cut down so much more easily than the full version, of course. And like, take the Match of the Century from Disney, for instance, you find that everywhere, so the price will never be insane. So it's a good starting point, I guess, for any collector, of course, to get there.
Yeah, what I don't understand is, like, why is Star Wars original digest so expensive when that was one of the most produced digests on the market? They produce tons of those. Why are they so expensive?
Yeah.
You know, I don't get that, but supply and demand, I guess. I don't know.
There was one interesting point that I wasn't aware of that a friend of mine, Tony Lewis, was mentioning to me, and that there was when some of the distributors made digests at 400 and the 200, often they didn't pick all the same scenes in those two versions. The 200 is not just a shorter version of the 400, then it might have different scenes as well. So some people are collecting the 400 and the 200 of some release and cut it together and make a longer digest than the 400 was. And in some cases, you perhaps even have extracts as well, and then you can make an even longer version. Back to editing the film, what works on the 400 perhaps didn't work on the 200, so the scenes were not the same.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. Mentioning people taking a 200-foot digest and editing it with a 400-foot digest to get a much longer film. I know, speaking of Star Wars again, that was the famous one that people did that with, because what you got in the 200-foot one, I think, was essentially different than what eventually got released in the 400-foot edition. And a lot of people did that to have a longer film. Made it a lot more exciting, too. And it's fun. I like editing. I like sitting down working physically with my films, and I like doing that myself.
Yeah, I'm a bit torn, because in one part of me would like to do it, and the other part would like hate to cut any existing digest.
I understand that. You don't want to spoil the original product. No.
That's probably all the points I had on this subject. Do you have anything you want to add, Doug?
That's pretty much it. I think we covered the digest topic pretty well, and extracts and so forth. I think we covered it pretty much. Unless you want to do a part two eventually, we can maybe cover even more undiscovered ground.
Perhaps we could do that if we get some feedback on the matter. And talking about feedback, if you listen to this and have some thoughts you want to share or some points we missed, please share your thoughts by sending an email to feedback@hummingprojector.com and tell us what you think. We would love to hear your feedback, even if you say some positive things about the show, or you have some critics to the show, or you would tell us about something we missed. We would love to hear from you, so please send your feedback to feedback@hummingprojector.com. And with that, we have reached the end of this episode. I'm Ivan Moik, and with me is Douglas Waring, and thanks for listening.
It was fun. Thanks, guys.